Parker. Come and lay down, honey. Good boy. Just lay down. So let us begin with the Sufi invocation, those of us who know it. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master. The Spirit of Guidance. And let us take a few moments to invoke and invite the presence of the illuminated souls, the masters, saints, and prophets, those that have walked before us, and those who we follow in their footsteps. Those who have brought the divine word and expressed it through flesh, and that's our big dog here who's affirming that with a moan. Give your life to be one of those love dogs, Rumi says. And we especially invoke the presence of Piramurshid Anayat Khan. Today is the eve of his wedding day, as they say in Sufi terms, when he left his earthly body and was united with the beloved God. And I have heard from friends that are there now at the Dargah, the festivities have already begun and will continue for a few days, so we tune in to those of our friends that are there and to Murshid's living presence that is always with us as we turn to his words. So today I thought it would be fitting to give the message that Murshid gave on July 28, 1925. This is part of a collection of papers called the Message Papers. And this paper is titled, The Teaching Given by the Murshid to His Murids, or The Teacher to the Students. The Teacher's Given from the Teacher to His Students. And I was reflecting on this, even the title of it, and how it must have felt for Murshid to give this teaching to his murids. Because in one way, he's talking in the abstract about the relationship of student and teacher, but in another way, he must have been trying to convey something to those that were around him, and how both difficult and subtle that can be. So as we listen to the paper, and it's recorded from his oral transmission, taken in shorthand, but think what he must have been thinking to give these words and to try to express this to those who were close to him. This is a collection of papers that isn't necessarily public, so we know that these are in the archives, and therefore we also can assume that maybe this paper was given to those who were closest to him in a kind of inner circle. And these people, we also might want to remember, were people that were from sometimes even a kind of the royal class, very educated. You know, those that were around him had traveled well. They knew multiple languages, including things like Persian and Arabic. So they had a draw to this kind of oriental, you know, Eastern tradition. And still, Murshid is compelled to offer this teaching. So keep that in mind. And again, I sort of imagine what that might have been like to feel compelled to have to give these words to his own students and those closest to him. So he begins in this way. My blessed Murids, my blessed students. Joe, do you want to just, is he doing okay? Because this is very unusual for him to be making these noises. Is he okay in his back leg, his left leg? Is it caught? Is it okay? Okay. So everyone listening in, and for the sake of the recording, we're in our home in a neighborhood, so the postman could come, and we'll have this barking of dogs, of which we have two large ones, so just to set the environment, and we'll just keep moving through and concentrating. So back to Murshid's words. My blessed Murids, I would like to speak this evening on the subject of the teaching that is given by Murshid to his Murids. Again, Murshid is teacher, Murids are students. This training can be divided into four classes, or we could say classifications. And the four classes, again, divided into two divisions. Finer training and grosser training. Now here the terms finer and grosser, maybe we could discuss that, because as we read through we'll see that maybe what Murshid is describing as the grosser training is more the technical part, or the theology, you might say, and the finer training is something very subtle, okay, maybe more esoteric. We could also think of it as outer and inner. So he's describing the grosser training first. The grosser training is the philosophical statements in the form of literature that a Murshid gives, and the teaching in the realm of spoken words, words which Murshid gives. So the philosophical statements, the philosophical thought behind the practices and behind the tradition. Number two, the other aspect of the grosser training is the practices, which Murshid prescribes to his Murids, the way of doing these practices, and the benefit that can be derived from them. That also comes under the heading of the grosser training. So again, first we have the philosophical, then we have the actual training in terms of the practices, not only the words of the practices, but how to do the practices. So this is a form of that, maybe the technology behind our training. And three is the finer training. Hardly a Murid knows the finer training. For the finer training, Murshid becomes very subtle. He uses subtlety in training every Murid. And the great skill of Murshid in this is that perhaps the Murid does not realize it for many, many years. This training is given by testing and trying the Murid to the utmost. It's not an easy path, testing and trying the Murid. It's really, in a way, we might say, holding the mirror up, a very strong mirror. And sometimes setting up a set of circumstances through which the student can learn what they're very much needing to learn, or refine even. I'm hearing the line from the third patriarch of Zen, "The way is not difficult for those who have no preference." But we do have preferences. And we like it when people are acting a certain way towards us or saying certain things, and we don't like it when they're doing other things. This also is included in this relationship, which can become very challenging, I think, at times. So he goes on to describe some details of this subtle approach. And he says, a teacher may look at one Murid with his eyes and look at the other Murid with the eyes of his mind. So in one sense, seeing something in the very mundane may be something Murshid is reflecting back, or the teacher does. But then in another sense, maybe it's something deeper than that, that the teacher is seeing. Murshid may listen to what one Murid is saying and hear the call of another Murid's heart. Murshid may speak to one and teach to the other one who you do not see there. This is so subtle when you think of it, because Murshid is saying something to the one directly and yet teaching to another one. How's that possible? Anyone want to speculate? How does that occur?
It's like one always hears in their own language,
It's true. Well, it's interesting because we've heard it of, I know we've heard it, it's a common thing that I've heard in Buddhism, that when the Buddha spoke, everyone heard exactly what they needed to hear and understood at the level at which they could understand. But let me give you an example. This is from my own life, and it has to do with Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan. So Murshid Hidayat would... He was very diplomatic, and at least he was with me. And I saw his diplomacy and his wit and his humor. And he sometimes, to the fault of not being extremely direct, because he didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. But when we met, we had decided that we would always tell each other the truth, and that we would... at times we acted like each other's shill, you know what I mean? Like we could do things to convey to something to others around us by using each other as the example. So there's a way that you can do that. So maybe I'm interacting with Karimagita or Mudita, but it has nothing to do with that person. I'm saying something, but it's really intended for this person over here without being direct. Am I correct? You understand what I'm saying? Has that not happened? And it has to do with also a subtlety of that vibration going on, and hopefully reaching out to touch someone's heart. So I don't want to tell stories on myself, but I know if Yusuf was here, he would tell this story himself. So one of our friends in our circle who's in California was traveling with his brother, who, God rest his soul, is now deceased. But the brother had physical handicaps and extreme challenges. And I knew that they were traveling over the holiday together when his brother was still alive. And it was very unusual. I don't even recall if maybe Yusuf was going to stop by Kansas City on his en route. But for some reason, I felt this very strong impulse to pick up the phone and call him, which was unusual. I maybe only did that one or two times. And he answered the phone, and I said, Yusuf, how are you? And of course, he was in the middle of a big kind of episode where he was very upset with his brother, and with good cause, but it was a challenging time with the travel on airplanes and things. And he realized that it just stopped in that moment for him, you know. But I did, you know, in some ways I must have known that I could help by interceding in that way. And he was able to catch himself in that moment of crisis. So I'm sorry, Yusuf, I hope that doesn't offend you, but you've told that story on yourself publicly, so I thought it would be okay to share. Has that ever happened to you, where your teachers reached out or you've had something and it's just like, how can that be? Or someone very special that inspires you, they show you something or they give themselves as an example, you know, that maybe helps you see things more clearly?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one time, Joe, when we were visiting Umchuk Rinpoche, and I think he was trying to tell, you know, he had a lot of attendants, and one of them really enjoyed eating. And so Rinpoche, in an effort to inspire this one monk to be more disciplined in his eating, was very disciplined with himself. So after 12 noon, he would eat no more than one little slice of papaya. And he was hoping through his own example that he would inspire the monk to also take more moderation. So it can also be in that way too. You remember, Joe, him telling us that?
I remember a time when I was driving back from camp with Shabda, mm-hmm. Shabda Khan, and his beloved Tamam was in the back seat, and they were both asleep. And the road started having a rhythm, and I started hearing a zikr in that rhythm, and I started to feel like I was, and I'm usually pretty grounded, but you know, it was after camp, so I was a little high. Started to feel like I was going to fly out of my head, and I thought, it's not a good feeling to, with the peer in my car, and his wife. And at that moment, Sean was like, and how are you doing, my dear? You know, I was like, I'm so glad that you woke up. The road is, you know, singing zikr to me. Like that.
Like that. It's exactly like that. Yeah. So Murshid may speak to one and teach to another who you do not see there. So he's saying they maybe aren't even there. Or maybe you're unaware. Murshid may say a phrase simply, and there may be something more subtle hidden behind it. This really requires for us to be very awake, doesn't it? And very attentive. Not to take things for granted. Murshid may say a phrase simply, and there may be something more subtle behind it. And if by this subtle way Murshid does not elevate the pupil, then the murid is not in the right place. What do you think that means? And if by this subtle way Murshid does not elevate the pure pupil, then the murid or the student is not in his or her right place.
Yeah,
seems a little ambiguous to me. Like, are they not in the right relationship with their, with the Murshid, or is it like, is he saying they're not in the right place within themselves? And it's ambiguous to me.
Okay.
For me, there's also an implication in that of the responsibility of the Murshid in that relationship.
I think so, very much so. And I sometimes think that is not always, people are not always mindful of that.
Could it as well be a focus that the Murshid is focused so intently on this aspect of his life, but that's not the point right now, and he misses, he might not be getting the teaching.
Yeah, I read something the other day. It was like this, I'm paraphrasing it. Well, we're waiting for God to answer our prayers. God is waiting for us to learn patience. And I also think that when, from speaking from my own experience again, if I can be very empty and very reflective is when I can absorb the most. But if I'm in my own thoughts about what I'm going to say next or how I might want to give an impression to someone, then there's no way that I can be in that natural receptive moment. You know, the mirror in a way needs to be empty so the reflection of the Murshid can be there and we can see it. You understand that? Murshid may say a thing to a Murid to see its effect at that particular moment, which has nothing to do after that. That's very important. It's only for that moment, but not after that. Now, what's the subtlety in this? What do we do after that? Rewind, play, rewind, play, rewind, play. And not only rewind, play, rewind, interpret while it's playing or reinterpret, thereby missing the whole point perhaps of what is given. Yes? Does that make sense? Yes, Jen.
When I first started my dance practice, my teacher said, try that without using your arms. And I hadn't had very many classes, so I thought that meant forever. And about 10 years later, I said, oh, wait a minute. You meant right now.
Right.
You didn't mean
forever.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right. And we just kind of, we concretize things. We're not in the moment or letting it flow, you know? Yeah, it's a good example. I can't imagine a dancer not using their arms, but.
Well, it was just in one
in particular.
One
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember, it's another time, Murshid Hidayat was here and he had come because a piece of his music was going to be played. And so, it is a very emotional and beautiful piece of music. And the musicians, perhaps like dancers also, they get caught in the technical aspect of the music. And they lose the feeling. So they, while they may be technically proficient, there's something that doesn't happen as part of playing that music. So I remember the conductor said, we were in a huge auditorium, and we were just the musicians and Murshid Hidayat and Murshida Aziza and myself and the conductor, And he said to someone that was running the facility, turn the lights out. And he said, now I'm going to conduct, and you're going to play without seeing the music. And you know what? It sounded so different because they were feeling the music and they were feeling each other in that moment. So it was a very different experience. And so it's like that too, you know. But one has to be very awake and paying attention. Murshid may act a certain way, which would have an effect at that moment and has nothing to do afterwards. So he may say something, or he may act a certain way. Has anyone had that occur? And again, Murshid is Murshid, but everyone's our teacher in some way. Isn't that true? Man, you all have had it a lot easier than I have. I guess my teachers have really had the big stick out sometimes, but in the best way ever, you know? It feels like pure love. And it's, you know, it serves to aid us and help us become refined. I think it's hard for a human being to, you know, be a teacher. What it really means in every sense of the word is maybe we have a little more experience than someone else and we can walk alongside them. I think that's true of any person that's guiding another person, whether that be in a classroom or on a spiritual path. And we might just be a half step ahead, but you know, I really believe that that's true, and we learn together. You know, it's like Comte Rinpoche would say, every person that comes before me is as if they're presenting themselves on as a stepping stone to my enlightenment, that every person is an agent of change to every other person. So, you know, in one way we're talking about students and teachers, but then again, what does that really mean? I mean, these little four-legged ones teach me as much as anyone else can about love and acceptance and knowing when to be fierce, knowing when to be calm. I mean, look at them. So Parker's over there just looking, paying attention. You getting something out of the class, Parker boy? And Leo, the big one here, he's never missed one class. He's been to every class, imagine.
I think for me, you know, like with Murshid Wali Ali, I think he likes me to be outspoken. Like when we've had our Mir Reads retreat, you know, when you're gonna sit up in front of everyone in Murshid Sam's chair and either give a practice or tell something, you know, about your heart. You know, he's setting it all up, and then he'll turn to me and go, will you be first? You know, because he knows I would be. It's
right.
Okay, I'm comfortable in that. But at the same time, you know, there's always the big stick about you could be more Latif. Didn't I give you that practice to do Latif? You know, so it's like wants me to be expressive, but at the same time wants me to be refined. You know, it's a little bit of the sun, moon. I mean, that was actually, you know, a Dharma law. Sun, moon, which is be expressive when you need to be expressive,
right.
But you need to be receptive when you need to be receptive.
That's right. It's a balance.
Yeah.
And I think that you, I mean, I know you both, and I think you have that dynamic, too, where he may actually be talking to you or not. He could be talking to other people. But knowing that you can take it, he'll say it to you in front of a group.
Yeah.
And it's really trying to get it right.
Yeah, I'm remembering that experience with Murshid Hidayat.
Tell me.
Well,
or tell us.
Summer school.
Yes.
And I had been invited to offer the prayers.
Right.
And it was a new experience for me to get up in front of everybody and offer the prayers. And we were in the Maratha's Hill having lunch, and everybody's at their picnic tables outdoors, and he sat down with us and said he wanted to speak with me about how the prayers are to be done. And some of it had to do with the words of the prayers, and some of it had to do with the motions of the prayers, so that I would learn it in the way that Piero Murshid and Ayat Khan had given that too. So yeah, in that moment, I sort of remember that I was receiving this constructive criticism about the presentation of the prayers, but also the feeling. He spoke very loudly, but he had a way of projecting his voice. Anyway, he did that. But it was, you know, outdoors, and it felt as though he was saying that not just to me.
That's for sure, because that was very much one of his, you know, he was very particular about that, about the motions and how people, he often would say people are just, they're just want to be correct, and so they're very harsh and not sort of musical and beautiful, you know, with a, like a dancer with their arms, you know, he lectured many times about it, so he was using you in that moment. I mean, it may have been some truth, but I've only seen you act in a beautiful way when you've presented, but nonetheless.
But in that moment, did you feel a little effaced?
Well, and it was done in front of everybody. Right. But, you know, it was interesting. In that particular moment, I remember that was also important for me because I didn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
It was like an important moment for me to recognize
that. Yeah.
And he, I really appreciated.
Absolutely.
Appreciated learning from Murshid Hidayat.
He had done that to me also. I don't know if you were there. We were in the back room, so to speak. And he, again, it was very loud. And Nuria, I have something to say to you, and I want you to know that this is the way something should be said, not this way. And it was very loud, and everyone was listening. And I said, oh my gosh, thank you so much for telling me. I really appreciate that. And he looked at me and he said, you're not mad at me? And I'm like, why would I be mad at you? But you understand it was conveying something to others about how to receive criticism.
Yeah. Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think people would get upset when he offered them his insights, which, you know, could be viewed as personal criticism, but it's not that way. You have
and
another one?
Reminding me, because he did say that after he got done. He said, what? You're not upset?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I thanked him. I said, not upset?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, they can be good examples in that way, right? Because the impulse, of course, is that we want to protect ourselves, and we don't want to be effaced, and we don't want to, but the best example is just to surrender in that moment and be gracious. Maybe it's all about that. I remember one time, another story, I was presenting at the abode, and I was presenting on the body of teachings by Hazrat Piero Murshid and Ayat Khan on symbology, the Naqshbandi tradition. And I had, those were the days where you had slides. So I had traveled with two carousel of slides. Did I travel? I didn't have the carousels. Someone had brought the projectors and the slide trays. And so they had... I was showing side-by-side slides. And one of the slides had become caught, which often would happen. And I knew very well, I always traveled with a little fingernail file, so I knew how to release the slide. Someone jumped up, and I wasn't very far along. Were you there that year? I don't think you were. It was at leaders training, so it was a very small group of people where everybody knew everybody. And someone was trying to be helpful, and they took, and you know how the slide trays had to have rings on them? Well, this one didn't. So someone took the tray off and went like this. So half the presentation, which it had to do with side-by-side comparisons, was gone. It was all over the floor. There was nothing to be done. And so I thought, okay, first of all, I didn't want to react because I knew the person was trying to be helpful. So I said, God has his, her own sense of timing. And I think my presentation has concluded. And I thank you very much. But you know, I've done a lot of planning. And I was really just getting to my point. And, you know, and then I went away and I thought, my God, I feel so, you know, just like. And do you know the next day how many people came up and said, I remember something about your presentation, but the big teaching was how you handled that. You know, just how to handle a difficult situation. And it certainly has helped me many other times, you know, when presenting and the computer doesn't work or hook up, you know, you figure it out. And it's also just how to be with it and how to be receptive to the moment, maybe feeling what is the impulse of the moment, like what is the impulse of the teacher's message. And the teacher, of course, is everything.